The New York Historical Society opens a retrospective of his work called The Forgotten Ones. A new book by the same name has just been published. And you can see some of Milton Rigoven's photographs and learn more about his work at our website, npr.org. Belia Mayeno Choi is in her 20s now. She hasn't seen or talked to her father in 2 years. That will not change on Father's Day. In the course of her young life, Ms. Choi has made connections with other people her age who live with the memory of absent fathers. Their reflections come together here in a story by Youth Radio.
I only have one picture of my father. It's an expired Texas driver's license with an old granny photo. Height, 5'6". Eyes brown, hair black. I can see I have his dimples, and that his ears stick out just like mine. But there's no room on the card for his laugh, or the smell of his Dracar cologne, or the bag of peanut M&Ms he'd always bring me when he went to the store for a 12-pack. Luckily, there's also no room on the card for the way he made my mom cry when he slapped her, or all the times he promised to send me birthday cards that never appeared. I just can't build my dad out of a wallet-sized piece of plastic.
I remember my father. I remember what he looks like. My relationship wouldn't even say that it even existed. I mean, he was around, but mostly my brother and I were afraid of him most of the time. One thing that I remember particularly about my father is that no matter where he was, outside, in the house, whatever, he would always have a 8-inch buck knife strapped to his hip. I only remember like the segment from his ribs to his knees of his body, just like kind of zeroing in on that knife and just watching him walk around with it.
My dad died and he hadn't really been in my life since I was 7 years old. Yeah, I guess he was simultaneously one of the best things that ever happened to me and one of the worst things. My dad was an alcoholic, and he liked to drink a lot, and so there's nothing I could really do to, like, combat him. So my little passive-aggressive methods were peeing in his alcohol, and my mother is, like, my father in many, like, logistical ways, but she can't be fatherly, you know? So that spot is very vacant.
When I have a baby in my arms, somehow I always end up speaking and cooing Spanish. No llore, mija. Don't cry, daughter. ¿Tienes sueño, mi chiquitica? Are you sleepy, my little girl? I don't speak fluent Spanish now, but I know when I'm near a little one, some piece of me remembers when my father held me and talked to me in the language of his parents and ancestors. But the link that connected me to my Latin heritage feels like it broke when he left. Sometimes my Latino friends talk about the heavenly taste of birria or make puns that only make sense when spoken in Spanish, and I'm lost. Other people can see my ethnicity in the waves of my black hair and the curves of my Indio cheekbones. But I wonder if there's any true Latina in me, since my father wasn't there to water the seed he planted. Even if I did know my dad's phone number, I still couldn't call and ask what I really want to know. There is no easy answer to what it means to be a real Mexicana. How can I ever know myself if there's so much I don't know about my own blood?
Most of my friends' fathers aren't in their life, so in a way, we kind of like all fed off each other. We took like the 10 separate pieces and tried to like form a masculine identity that we could all like share and figured out what a father should be and like what we could have gotten out of a father.
The only male figure that I've had was my brother, who was adopted by my grandmother 11 years before I was born. To me, he was pretty much my saving grace. He was everything that I wanted to be, and he taught me a lot about acceptance and open-mindedness, everything, even everything down to, like, sex. And it often wasn't the best advice, but still, it was what I had, and I trusted him, and I still do.
It was really cool. Sometimes what he would do is he would pull me into the kitchen, and he would, like, just periodically, he'd be like, how does it feel to be 8? And I would tell him, and he'd be like, this is how I felt when I was 8. it was like a way for him to check in with me and a way for me to check in on myself. And I always thought that was like really nice. He always seemed very genuine. Yeah, I loved him. I really, really, really did love him.
When I was six, I used to have a small black notebook where I wrote plays with my dad and me as the main characters. We had lots of conversations in my mind, and he said all the things I wished he would say if he had been there. I told him about the strange bugs I found in the backyard, and he congratulated me on learning my multiplication tables, all in my make-believe world. But even then, I didn't wish for him. The reality of his presence would have meant hearing him yell at my mother because she didn't buy the right kind of mayonnaise, or being told to shut up when I talked to him while he was drinking with his rowdy friends. He had to leave, so I could grow up without fear.
I didn't know that children grew up not being beaten by their parents and not having their parents have like Hell's Angel parties in their house and be snorting speed off coffee tables. And I thought this was life and I just have to deal with it and be strong. And, you know, I mean, I remember vividly having those feelings when I was like 4 years old.
After my parents got divorced, he would tell me in great detail how he was going to kill my mother. And so I would always come home and I would be sure that I was just going to find her dead. I couldn't get in the house quick enough to find out if my mother was alive. And every time I did, I was just so thankful to make sure everything was okay. But I just had a knot in my stomach whenever I would come home for years and years.
When my sister and I went to visit my dad when we were little girls, he would lock us in the bedroom all day and leave the house. After hours of peering through the iron window bars, trying to see him come back down the street, we started to make up games to entertain ourselves until he came home. We made our own circus, with a tightrope made of shoelaces tied end to end and tacked to the walls, and balled up socks for the clowns to juggle. We somersaulted off the bed and yelled through the whirring blades of the portable fan so our voices would bellow like ringmasters. When we had exhausted ourselves and were falling asleep, my sister asked in her tiny voice, "Why isn't he coming?" My little monkey brown hand held her chubby one, and I said, with the feeling that my stomach was ripping in half, "I don't know." More than 10 years later, I still don't know why he never came.
I kind of just let go of my father. I just didn't have one. And oftentimes, I wonder when I see my friends hanging out with their dads, am I missing out? Like, I wonder what it would have been like if I had had a normal father or if I had had someone to have that bond with. But I didn't, so I don't even know where to start or what even to think I should be compensating for.
I don't know what I'd say to my father. He's a stranger to me, an ever-present silhouette. I couldn't just say one thing. I'd say I hate you, because I never got to know what it feels like to have someone look at the two of us and say to themselves, just as an almost unconscious passing thought, that is a father and a daughter. I'd say I love you, because the pearls of your DNA are half of my sister and I need to believe you love us too, even from thousands of silent miles away. I'd say thank you, because your presence and your absence are both chains and wings, and even though I don't know which one is which, I do know I wouldn't be who I am without you.
Belia Mayeno Choi, Shane Okesha, and Edward John Quillis. This story was produced by Youth Radio. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.